Okay, page 1036. Last week we learned about the Ari Miklat, the city as a refuge. We discussed a lot about the six, and then the additional three. Okay, then the Pasuk says like this. Pasuk Yud Aleph on 1036. This was all if you killed somebody accidentally, and we discussed there is random, completely random, that you don't have to go to the city of refuge at all. Sometimes city of refuge is not going to help you if it's almost intentional, but it's not really intentional, so you get in guilt. And then there's the normal, you know, normal accidental killing, and that then is you have to run to the city of refuge. So now the pasuk says like this: Ki yasein ish seinu l'reyehu. What happens if a guy hates somebody? So it's not accidental, but arav lo, and he ambushes him. Become olav, and he gets upon him. We call the nefesh for mace, and he hits, kills somebody, and the guy dies. V'nos alachas ahodim alachas ahodim ahel. He also has to run to one of these cities. Like we discussed last week, whether you kill somebody intentionally or accidentally, you run to the city of refuge. Okay? If you were accidental, Bezdin took you to Bezdin. When they ruled it's accidental, you went back. If it's intentional, that's what the Torah is speaking about now. But pizza station. Hello, pizza station. Okay. Now it says like this. From here, the Sfarim say like this. The Torah says, you should know that if you hate somebody, eventually you're going to come to kill him somehow. Maybe not, you know, in the physical sense, but he says the end result is, like the Gemara says, you do an easy sin, you're going to end up doing a harder sin. You start off hating somebody, then you're going to end up killing him. It doesn't mean killing him, you could take away his money, you can embarrass him, you could do various things to him, which is like killing. So the Torah says you have to be very careful. But guy kills somebody intentionally, even, he runs to the city of refuge. Then, the shol chuzikne irei, the elders of the city send, and they take him out of there. Because they have to be judged to see if he killed somebody intentionally, whether witnesses, whether not witnesses. V'nasno eisei, and they give him, biyad girl adam v'meis. He gives him into the hand of the avenger, and he dies. Meaning, like this, if Bezdin found the guy was guilty, and there is an avenger, there's a relative that's there, Bezdin lets him kill him. So Bezdin lets the guy kill him, and that's, The Torah says, Bezdin gives it to the avenger, he has the first rights to kill him. If there's no avenger, we don't know, then Bezdin does the killing process.
But it has to be blocked,
right? Yeah, we're speaking, that's what I'm saying. Bezdin checked out the guy was intentional, and it was all that, you know, everything that happened.
And then give it to the ranger.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But how does the ranger know that?
But
to kill him or not?
I mean, Bezdin says kill him. He is the messenger of Bezdin to kill the guy. Bezdin kills the guy, right? If Bezdin rules, the guy gets killed.
So when the Beti
rules that the guy gets killed, so who's the one that kills him?
He's the one.
In this case, the avenger kills him.
Who could be the avenger?
Relatives. Brother, father, son, brother, anybody.
Uncle.
Uncle, yeah. Okay.
If they say that we don't want to kill him,
the Bezdin will kill him. That, by the way, this is the next pasuk. L'soches ein cha'olav. You should not have any pity on him. You should remove the innocent blood from Israel. The Tevlachan will be good for you. In other words, the Torah says you need to get rid of this guy. Because, you should, the Rashi quotes from the Medrash. The Medrash says the guy, Bezdin shouldn't say, listen, the first guy's dead already. Why are you killing another guy? The Torah says you have a mitzvah to kill him. And that's how you get rid of all the evil amongst, because he killed the evil people, so there's no more evil left. And then the Torah said, V'tevlach is going to be very good for you. It will be good, and meaning there's a negative commandment in the Torah. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. You're not allowed to have pity on a murderer. Once you rule that he's supposed to get killed, that's it. He gets killed. And he says, what is the mitzvah over here? The mitzvah is to get rid of evil amongst the Jews. Because if you don't get it, he's going to do it again. He's going to do it again. So the Torah says, "Ein merachmim b'din," and you have to kill the guy. Because he did terrible things.
Rabbeinu?
Yeah.
What if there was no kosher witnesses and the guy had all the intention to kill him? You would go through.
If the guy had all the intention to kill him, then God, as Gemara says, Hashem takes care of the situation. He'll be one time on the bottom of a ladder and somebody will fall on top of him. And
what about the manger?
No. No. I made a mistake. The Avenger, he has to be careful his whole life from the Avenger. Because even if he killed him accidentally, and he's not in the city of refuge, the Avenger can kill him. Right? So if he killed him intentionally, the city of refuge doesn't help, but the Avenger can kill him whenever he sees him. So he has to watch his whole life.
Out of the city.
You know, even in the city, he can kill him. The city of refuge only helps those people that killed accidentally. If he killed intentionally, city's not going to help him. So he has to be careful his whole life, look over his shoulders the whole time to make sure that the Avenger is not there. In fact, there's two opinions, by the way. Is there a mitzvah on the Avenger to kill him? Even a guy that killed somebody accidentally. He says, the girl Adam, the relative, the Avenger, is allowed to kill him. So there's two opinions. One opinion says it's a mitzvah for him to kill him. Another opinion says it's not a mitzvah. If he wants to, he could.
A rabbi, if the Beis Din couldn't find the person guilty, do you still know that it's intentional? Or?
No, but obviously, in other words, we know that he did it, but there's no two witnesses. And that's the problem. But even if he killed him accidentally, intentionally, he has to watch the Avengers the rest of his life. Okay. Next, the Torah comes in like with one pasuk in the middle. And the Torah says like this. Leisasi gvura yachad. This is what's called Hasagas Gvul. This is a whole section of Shulchan Aruch based on this pasuk. Hasagas Gvul literally means move the boundary of your fellow man. In other words, if my farm is here and your farm is here, and this is the boundary, and this is my field, I can't move my boundary this way. In other words, to basically steal your property. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. Leisasik v'reyacha, you cannot move the boundary of your fellow from ashegavlu rishenim, from the boundary that was already marked from before. In your inheritance that you'll inherit, in the land of that Hashem will give you to rishta to inherit. So Rashi says an interesting thing. If you do that, it's stealing anyway. Right? If the boundary is here and I move the boundary here, so obviously I'm stealing your land. Right? So why does the Torah say only in Eretz Yisrael? So again, the Medrash says an interesting thing. In Eretz Yisrael, you get two sins. Stealing, and this pasuk, leisasi gvul reyacha. If you do it outside of Eretz Yisrael, you only get the sin of stealing. Because the Torah says, this extra mitzvah applies only in the land of Ebanachalashash, in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Now, this parsha is one of the things that later on the Torah speaks about the curses, you know, Aror curses the one that moves the boundary of his friend. Okay. Now, what's the connection between this pasuk and the pasuk before about killing somebody intentionally or imikla? What's the connection? So they say that once Hashem says to designate the three cities, so somebody would think, oh, Lacheira, these cities belong to certain people. And the Torah says, no, now they're communal cities. When Moshe Rabbeinu made the Ari Miklat, right? The Ari Miklat was here. That city belonged to that tribe that lived there. And all of a sudden the Torah comes along and says, yeah, this city now becomes a city of refuge. Right? Whoever wants can live. It's not yours anymore. So somebody might think, once the Torah says, for communal needs, it's like the old style kings or communism. For the sake of the cause, your land belongs to me. It's all for the sake of the holy cause. So somebody might think I could take away boundaries from somebody else for a holy cause. And the Torah says you can't. Nadi Miklat was unique, and you can't do it. But this mitzvah of Asogas Gvul, or negative commandment of Asogas Gvul, by the way, applies to a lot of dinim. You can't take away somebody's business. You can't, the broad was called Asogas Gvul. You can't take away somebody's business. But there's zillions of dinim with this. You know, I can't come and take away your business, but I can open up a store. Halachically, it says midas chsidus, it's proper not to. But halachically, you can open up a store next to a store. And you can say, listen, whoever comes to me, comes to me. Whoever comes to you, comes to you. But that's only if both people live in the neighborhood. What happens if one guy lives in the neighborhood, a guy from another neighborhood wants to come and open the store next to him, then the community could stop him. Because he's taking away local business. But if two people in the local community, halachically, one could open up a grocery store next to a grocery store, whatever. Clothing store next to a clothing store, it's not a problem. It says, midas chsidus, it's appropriate not to do it, but halachically, you would be allowed to do it. But Asogas Gvul means taking away somebody's business, telling people from somebody else's business to come to you. I mean, all these things are a part of this negative commandment called Leisasi Gvul Reyacha. You can't do Asogas Gvul. Okay.
So if somebody hurts you, you have to just say it's forgiven and not...
Well, this has nothing to do about taking revenge. That's a separate mitzvah. This is just taking away somebody else's property. Or taking away somebody else's livelihood. Or taking away somebody else's business. Or whatever.
No, at the beginning you said that if somebody make you angry and you hate somebody somehow.
Oh, eventually you're going to come to kill him, yeah. It's forbidden to hate anybody. I mean, Jews at least. Why is that a problem?
No, nothing. I don't hate anybody.
She gets the Tzaddik Award today. With the Tzaddikus Award. Let me just tell you, I say this a lot of times from a business perspective. Why do people hate people or dislike people? Because they do something bad to you. Bottom line. Or their existence bothers your existence. You know, the mere fact. You know, it's an interesting thing. They say, a guy goes to a rav, years ago about an animal. Yeah, you shechted an animal, there's a question on the animal. You know, it could be a loss of a lot of money. An ox, you know, you shechted an ox, it could be a year's livelihood. You go to the rav, and you show, it's a question on the animal, and the rav says, sorry, it's treif. Yeah? You accept it, it's treif. But let's say it's a $500 loss of money. You accept it. But if you go to a din Torah, and you lose $300, you get angry at everybody. What's the difference? The world, there's the expression in Yiddish, the Welt says, the world says, it's not that I lost the money, it's that the other guy won. What bothers me is not that I lost. I'll give an example. This used to happen in Shul. They were very wealthy people. Yeah? You ask them, give me $100. They'll give you $100. And they'll give you $100. But when they get a ticket outside for $25,
they cry.
They scream and yell. I said, if I asked you for $100, you give me $100. So now you paid, then it was $25, now it's more. So you pay the guy, you didn't have the money in the meter, the guy gave you a ticket. What are you screaming at? It's only, you know, the point is, it's not that I lost the money, it's that guy got the money. You know, that he made me lose the money, he controlled me. That's the issue. So now coming back to this point, yeah? Let's say I hate somebody. Hello, I'm answering your question, ma'am.
I
I'm listening.
Let's say I hate somebody because they did something bad to me. Because of that, I don't like them. Let's not use the word hate. I don't like them. Yeah? Now, I'm telling you, ask yourself, all of us, we should ask yourself the following question. God has more reason to not like us than the other person, than I do to the other, for the other person. Right? We don't listen to God plenty. Yeah. Not one time somebody didn't listen to me, I get angry at him. Yeah? We don't listen to God plenty. Do we want God to be angry at us? No. Why? Because we need God. Okay. So, the way God works, if somebody does something bad to me, and I don't get angry at him, then we do something bad to God, meaning an avera, then God doesn't get angry at us. But if God sees that every time somebody does something bad to me, I get angry at him, I curse him, I hate his guts, and so on and so forth, yeah? Then why shouldn't God do the same thing to us when we get him upset? Right? Mm-hmm. So if you're a business-minded person, you realize, you know what? It doesn't pay. Because then God acts towards us the way we act towards somebody else. That's what Hashem does. Mida keneged mida. Got it? But that's the mitzvah sagas gvul. Okay, now starts a lot of interesting psukim all about witnesses. Okay, 1036, pasuk tezvav. Layakum eid echad beish. A single witness shall not stand up against any man. L'chol oven or l'chol chatos, for any aveda, for any sin. B'chol chet asheyachto, any sin that the person does. That means, if one witness testifies that a person committed a sin, and that's the connection to murder and all these things, one witness comes and says, I saw the way this guy murdered somebody. The Torah says, it's no good. What does the Torah say? Alpi shnei edim, based on the testimony of two witnesses, or alpi shleish edim, or based on the testimony of three witnesses, yokum dover, the thing will exist. The thing lasts. Okay? Now, what the Torah is saying is like this. And Rashi says this from the Gemara, but there's a lot of Gemara over here. Anytime, there's a few exceptions, and I'll tell you what the exceptions are. Anytime one witness comes to testify, whether it's punishment, monetary punishment, you must have two witnesses. Okay? You have to have two witnesses. One witness cannot get you punished. One witness cannot extract money. For instance, Rashi gives this one particular case. I come to you and say, you owe me $1,000. You say, I owe you nothing. So if I bring two witnesses that you owe me $1,000, you have to pay. There's no question. You have to pay me the money. What happens if I have one witness? One witness comes and says, you owe him the money. So the Torah says, it can't extract the money. The only thing the Gemara says, and the Gemara learns it out from this pasuk, it says, l'chol oven or l'chol chatos. It can't make you pay money, but it can make you swear. Which means, halachically, like this. If I come to you, let's speak about monetary issues first, and then we'll get to the other types of punishments. I come to you, obviously, if I have a document, I have proof. There's two witnesses signed on it, so it's a valid proof. I don't need any edim. I have edim. I come to you and say, you owe me $1,000. You say, I don't owe you a thing. And I provide two kosher witnesses. Okay, the Bezin checks them out, make sure they're valid, kosher, everything. You have to pay him the money. There's no question. What happens if I have no witnesses? I say, you owe me $1,000. And you say, I don't owe you anything. And I have no witnesses. So biblically, I have the burden of proof. If I say you owe me money, I have to prove it. You don't have to prove that you don't. I have to prove that you do, obviously. All of it, you want to extract money, you have to prove it. In that case, by the way, it was called Kofer Hakol. The person denies everything. The Chachamim gave the defendant a rabbinic oath. He has to swear, I owe you nothing, and he's off. Okay? What happens if I have one witness that you owe me $1,000? So the din is, I cannot extract the money. The din is, the defendant needs to swear against the witness. That means, the witness says, you do owe him $1,000. The person has to swear, I don't. It's a biblical oath, by the way. This is one of the three biblical oaths in the Torah. You swear, I don't owe you money, and then you're off the hook. You don't have to pay it.
What is the text?
What do you mean the text?
Does it have to...
No, it's oral in Beis Din.
Is there a formula that he has to say, a certain formula?
Beis Din makes him swear, holding on to a sefer Torah, and not only that, there's three biblical oaths. Okay, it's relevant to what we're going to be learning here. All other oaths are rabbinic, number one. And as a rule, you don't swear and take. I can't swear you owe me the money and take it. You only swear and get out of the money, get out of payment. Which, by the way, there are a few exceptions to this rule. And I'll give you an examples in a second. There's three biblical oaths. One is, if I say you owe me $1,000, and you say I owe you $500, called modah v'miksas. No witnesses, no nothing. You have a biblical oath to swear, I don't owe you more than 500. You get out of it. The next biblical oath is if a shomer is watching something, an animal, and the animal dies, and there's no witnesses, he has to swear that the animal died accidentally. That's another biblical oath. The third biblical oath is what's called Eid Echad. Eid Echad means, I say you owe me $1,000. You say I owe you nothing. I bring one witness that says you do. Kosher witness, person checks it out. One witness says you owe him $1,000. You have to swear against the witness to say I don't owe him the money. And that's it. Then you're off the hook. What happens if you can't swear?
What do you mean?
You can't swear against the witness.
Why?
Pain. Huh?
You pay.
Why can't you swear?
Maybe he has taken a vow that he doesn't want.
I'll tell you a few cases. I walk into your house. This is a case what's called Nascha Drababa. Nascha is like a Kiddush cup, a bech of silver, piece of silver. I come into your house and I take a big piece of silver. You come to Beis Din and say, why did you steal my thing? I said, I didn't steal it, it's mine. Mm-hmm. It was my menorah in your house. So I'm taking my menorah. One witness testifies that he took it. He doesn't know what. All the witness testifies he took it. Correct? Now, normally I could say I never took it. But there's a witness that says I did take it. So in order for me to be able to get out of this, what do I have to do?
Swear.
I have to swear. What do I have to swear?
That I didn't take it.
If the witness says you took it, you have to swear against the witness. That means the opposite of what the witness says. So you have to say, I didn't take it. You can't swear you didn't take it because you said, yeah, I did take it, but it's mine. Right? So I can't, it's like, I have to swear
to get out of it.
But the problem is, I can't swear against the witness because the witness says you took it. That means I would have to swear I didn't take it. So I can't swear. So therefore you have to pay it back. There's a rule, mitoich sheina yochel lishava. If you can't swear, mishalim, then you have to pay it. That's the halacha argument in the Gemara, but that's the opinion in the Gemara. But there's another case that the Chachamim say, it's all rabbinic, by the way. Let's say you have to swear to me. Okay? You have to swear to me that, I say you owe me $1,000, you say I owe you $500. So you have to swear, right? You have to give me the $500 that you admit, and you have to swear on the other end. But the guy's a born known liar, and Beis Din doesn't trust him to swear. So what do you do? He can't swear because he's going to lie. Bezdin knows he's a liar. So what did he do? In that case, the plaintiff, the one that says, you owe me the money, he swears and takes.
But he has to swear.
He has to swear. He has to swear. But over there, it's rabbinic that Chum said, listen, this guy can't swear, so we're just not going to give you the money, so you have to swear and take it. Okay, it's a crazy story. Then you have another case. It's another weird case also. It's called Chevani al Pinkasi. It's also in Gemara. It's a very interesting case. I'm a boss. You're my worker. You worked for me. I owe you $1,000. I tell the storekeeper, you're my storekeeper. I tell the storekeeper, do me a favor. Give her the $1,000 that I owe her. And I'll pay you back the money. Okay? That's what was supposed to happen. You come to me and say, I never got the money. So I go to the storekeeper and say, why didn't you give her the money? He said, you did give her the money.
I did give
it. Yeah, and therefore you're asking me for $1,000, and she's asking me for $1,000. Right? Because I owe you $1,000, but you were supposed to give it to her, but either you did or didn't. Somebody's lying. But you're coming to me and said, what do you mean? You owe me $1,000. You told me to pay her $1,000. I have to pay the $1,000. Yeah? So what do you do in that case?
You want to pay half?
No. Why? That's what the... You know what happens? It's very funny. You swear that you gave the money. She swears she never got it and have to pay both of you.
Next time use credit card.
Next time use credit card. Only American Express. What? Okay, we're going way off topic. Well, let's get back to the... Anyway, so the Torah says like this. Al-pi shnayim edim, or al-pi shleish edim yokum dover. It can only be two witnesses or three witnesses. Yokum dover, can the thing exist. Okay? Or shleish edim yokum, what?
Why does it say two or three?
Ah, the good question. The Gemara asked that question. It doesn't make sense. If two witnesses are good, what do I need three? Right? So what does it mean? It's a very... The Torah doesn't make sense. I mean, it's either two or three. Which one is? If two are good, why do you need three? So the Gemara learns out from here like this. A lot of laws from this. Number one, that just like two witnesses, if one of the two become disqualified, no testimony. The same thing, three witnesses. If one becomes disqualified, there's no testimony either.
Well,
there's two kosher witnesses left. Right?
If they come together or?
They come together.
Okay.
Yeah? I'll give an example. Two brothers, Moshe and Aaron, very firm religious Jews, no question, nice Jews. They cannot testify together because they're brothers. Brothers cannot testify. So what happens if Moshe, Aaron, and Jack come to testify? Right? So you have three witnesses. Two of the three are kosher. Moshe and Jack, or Aaron and Jack are good, right? But the pile, they're coming together as one group of witnesses. The din is, if one's no good, they're all no good. What's called in halacha, Eidus Shabatla Miktsasa Batla Kula. If part of the testimony is no good, all 100. And that's why the Torah says 2 and 3. Just like by 2. If one's disqualified, you don't have the testimony of 2, so it's no good. Same thing, 3. If any of them are not kosher, that's it. So you can have 100 witnesses, and 99 are good, but one's no good, all 100 are no good.
It's not fair.
Number two, what do we learn out from two and the fact of 2 and 3, that 3 is not better than 2. 100 and 2 are exactly equal. Logically, 100 witnesses is better than 2 witnesses. But once you have 2 kosher witnesses, they're like a billion. And therefore, if 2 witnesses say you owe him the money, two witnesses say you don't owe him the money, they cancel each other out, and it's no good. Even if 100 witnesses say you owe him the money, and two witnesses say you don't owe him the money, they cancel each other out, and it's over.
And it doesn't matter if like these 300 know each other, came together or not. It doesn't matter.
If any of them are no good for whatever reason, they're all no good. And as I mentioned last time, a long time ago, we learned this. If you ever go to a wedding where you have two witnesses watching the ring, the kedushin, the ring giving, if you ever know, they always call up the witnesses, designating the witnesses, right? Two people, Reuven and Shimon, are going to be the witnesses. Many people even add to the exclusion of all others. If you ever hear carefully, a lot of Rabbanim will say that. Halachically, if you just say Reuven and Shimon are the witnesses, that automatically disqualifies everybody else. But some people say clearly to the exclusion of all others. Why is that done? Because just think what goes on by a chuppah. Under the chuppah, the father is there, brothers are there, relatives are there. Yeah? If they're going to be watching the ring giving, let's say you have 10 people under the chuppah, and one of them is a relative, so everybody, because it's not a kosher, it's disqualified. You don't have any witnesses. It's not a kosher wedding. So what do you do by designating the witnesses? You're saying nobody else can testify. Nobody else here is a witness. They can watch. It doesn't matter. They're not a witness. There's only two witnesses here. Reuven and Shimon are the only two witnesses to the exclusion of all others, meaning nobody else is a witness. If they're not a witness, then it's not disqualified because they're not coming as a witness. That's the reason why they do it. But anytime part of a testimony is no good, the whole... And these are some of the Gemara learns out a lot of halachas, but these are two basic dinim. Api shnayim, shnei edim, shloish edim, meaning two and three are the same. And secondly, if any of them are no good, none of it is good. But there's another interesting din the Gemara says over here also. Al pi shnei edim. It has to be on their mouth. And the Gemara learns out from here, it's a very interesting halacha. Mi pihem, v'lo mi piksavam. It has to be verbal testimony, oral testimony. It cannot be written testimony.
Audio tape, video tape.
No good. It has to be oral testimony.
Even if it's...
Now, in monetary issues, the rabbis allowed two witnesses to sign the paper. But let's say you want to be a witness on a murder. Yeah? And you're going to write up a testimony in paper and send it into the Beis Din. Your signature, everything. Notarized, whatever you want. You're going to send a letter to the Beis Din. I testified that I saw the moon. I testify I saw the murder. I testify whatever it is. It's worthless. By monetary issues, for the sake of the world, it's called Tikkun Olam, for the benefit of the world, the Chachamim allowed it in writing. Why? Because if I lend you $1,000, yeah, what's the proof? I have two witnesses, yeah? The witnesses might die. They might be overseas. Why should I want to lend you $1,000 in front of two witnesses? The witnesses might be out of here. And then I'll never be able to collect my money. So it came a time, people said, why should I lend anybody money? I'm not going to have any proof of it. Now I have two witnesses. The witnesses might die. They might go overseas. Who knows what's going to happen? So Chamim said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to allow you in documents for monetary things only to write a note. But if you want to testify that this guy ate chazer and therefore he should get lashes or anything else, the Torah says, al pi shnayim edim. From here, the Gemara learns another thing. Everybody knows that Mordechai in the Megillah, when he overheard the two Bigson and Sadish plotting against the king, right? They were speaking Turkish, and Mordechai knew Turkish. Right? So it says, why did Mordechai know Turkish? Because he was on the big Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin, the members of the Sanhedrin had to know a lot of languages. Why? Because of the halacha. The Torah says you have to hear it from the witness's mouth. If you have a translator, it's no good. If you, let's say you speak Farsi, and the judge doesn't speak Farsi, and the witnesses are going to come in Farsi and testify, and the judge doesn't know what you're talking about, and you're going to have an interpreter, you did not hear the testimony based on the mouth of the witnesses. You heard it on the interpreter. What?
Even if it's live, let's say video conference, that doesn't...
Video conference is worthless. By the way, even a secular court, you can do... You know what you can do today to any video you want? Mm-hmm. Not only that, that's why telephone also wouldn't be good testimony. If you call a Beis Din and say testimony, yeah, it's not going to be accepted. I mean, in monetary cases today, they allow it, because we said because of the benefit of the world. If you call up Beis Din and say, you know what, I just watched a murder. I mean, when capital punishment existed, the telephones didn't exist. But let's say, yeah, you call up on the telephone and it says, I saw a murder now. I saw this guy eat pig, you have to give him lashes. They didn't hear it from your witness's mouth. They heard it from a mechanically reproduced voice that a telephoner is, and therefore it's no good.
There's a medium between.
It's not your voice. It's a mechanically reproduced voice. So it wouldn't be good. Tarsal Pish and I made them. It has to be by the mouth of two witnesses. By the way, based on this, the different parts it says about Yuma Sameis, but there's a very big halachic question, for instance. If you could prove in DNA that somebody killed somebody, if you could prove in DNA, according to halacha, meanwhile, in halacha, it's not acceptable. Because the Torah says it has to be based on the witness of testimony of two witnesses. Doesn't matter. DNA is not the testimony of two witnesses.
What do you say, meanwhile?
I don't know. They're talking about
it. It's not testimony. It's evidence.
No. You need testimony, not evidence.
Could DNA make them get out of it?
No. No, if two witnesses testify, the guy was murdered somebody, yeah? Like nowadays, every other day, a guy's off because DNA proves that in Torah, that wouldn't work. If Beis Din Paskin, based on testimony of two witnesses, and trust me, we learned in the Gemara, you know, when it comes to capital punishment, they really check it out. But Beis Din rules a guy supposed to get killed because of the testimony of two witnesses, even if he could prove in DNA that he didn't do it, it doesn't matter. Torah says the two witnesses does it. That's it. Nothing else you can do about it. Okay, so the Torah says like this. Layokum, let's just see the pasuk inside. Layokum ishecha be'i, a single witness cannot stand up against any man, v'chol oven, v'chol chatos, v'nei iniquity, any sin, or any, whatever it goes, any error, v'chol cheta sheyachto, any sin that the person does. One witness is not enough to get you to be liable for sinning. Al pi shnei edim, based on the testimony of two, meaning, as Rashi says, no written testimony, no interpreter testimony. Al pi shnei edim yakum davar, based on the testimony, it says two or three witnesses yakum davar that the thing exists. Now, there are times, by the way, and this halacha discusses. one witness is enough. What's called Eid Echad Nemen Bi Sudan.
In what cases again?
Where one witness is enough. No, so look, what's the case? Very simple case. You go out to a restaurant to eat. Yeah? How do you know the food's kosher?
Mashgiach.
The Mashgiach. The Mashgiach testifies, basically, that the food is kosher. It's only one witness. I'll give you a different story. You're married. You go home. Your wife serves you dinner. Yeah? How do you know it's kosher? No, logically, how do you know it's kosher?
There's no evidence that it's not, so...
Well, I mean, everything's... Kosher to proven treif, or treif to proven kosher. Everything's treif to proven kosher, right? That's the way it's supposed to be. That's not the way it is. But by a lot of people, everything's kosher to proven treif. Yes, because it's kosher. How do you know it's treif? Okay. But a religious Jew, until they know for sure it's kosher, they don't eat it, correct? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. How do you know the food in your house is kosher? The answer is, I'm talking halachically, because the wife says it's kosher. She's serving it to you. Obviously, it's kosher. She's one witness, and she's a woman that we'll see in the next part, is normally not a kosher witness. The answer is, when it comes to kosher and treif, iser and heter, or for instance, a woman goes to the mikveh. Yeah, how do we know she went to the mikveh? She comes home, she tells her husband, "I went to the mikveh." Maybe she didn't. The answer is, she's one witness in iser and heter, and allowed and not allowed. One witness is believed.
Any iser.
But you're right. But what's more interesting, the Rambam says from a Gemara, but the Rambam says an interesting halacha. What happens if one witness says, this piece of meat is treif? You believe him? Yeah, one witness is believed by these things, right? Then, two witnesses testify that a guy ate that meat. He's going to get lashes. Right? Yeah, he will. If you eat treif of food, warned by witnesses, you get lashes, right? 39 lashes. So a guy, one witness says this meat is treif. That's what we only know is treif because of one witness. Then two witnesses testify that Jack ate the meat, warned everything. He's going to get lashes. Why? Because once the one witness is believed to say it's treif, he's like two. The Gemara has an expression, Kol mokim shamina Torah eid echod. Any case where the Torah believes one witness, harei hu kishnayim. He's like two. He's like two people. So the Torah says like this. So it says two witnesses make it good. Okay. Now the pasuk is going to continue about what's called Eidim Zomimim. Okay, we're going to soon see what this is, but let's get there first. Ki yokum eid chomes bi'ish. If a false witness stands up against a man, lani's bar started to speak against him. Va'amdu shneo anoshim ashalem ariv lefnei Hashem. And the two people that have the grievance, the case, will stand before the kohenim ashaftim, meaning the judges, which will be in their days. Meaning like this. The Bali Dinim will stand before Bezdin, and Rashi says, it says, Lifnei Hashem means you should, when you stand in court, you should feel that you're standing in the presence of God. And then, V'darshu Hashaftim Hetiv, the judges will make a very good checking. Okay, let me have to explain this then outside. All the laws of witnesses, by the way, don't make sense. Okay? By the way, it says in the pasuk, V'amdu shnei anashim. Rashi says, women cannot be kosher to testify because it says two men, which excludes women. Yeah, I know. There's nothing against the women, by the way. David Melech Yisrael was not also allowed to testify. Two brothers, Moshe and Aaron, can testify. One minute. Two and 100 are the same. Yeah? One is no good, all no good. All these things show one point. The laws of witnesses are completely illogical. As the Gemara says, they're all Gzeiros HaKosev. Moshe and Aaron, you can't get two more kosher witnesses than Moshe and Aaron, right? They're not gonna lie. Can't get better than them. But if Moshe and Aaron testify in a murder, nothing happens to the guy. Because they're brothers. They're relatives. Okay? So the Torah says, for whatever reason, you can get into the philosophical reasons why women cannot testify. Bottom line of it all, any reason you're gonna say, is worthless because it's completely exerts the cause of the Gemara says. It's an illogical thing. The Torah says men, in capital punishment cases, in monetary cases, not in Isser and Eter, that women are believed in all that. But in monetary issues, in punishing issues, women are not testifying, relatives cannot testify, wicked people cannot testify, all these people are not kosher to testify.
And it's called Gezerot what?
Gzeiros HaKosev. That's an expression in the sage, it means it's illogical. HaKadosh means the Torah says as an illogical reason, and that's it. That's all it is. Now, if two, let's give the scenarios and see how far we get in this today. It's very simple. Doesn't make sense, but it's simple. Okay? Somebody got killed. Two witnesses come and say, we testify, Reuven killed Shimon. Okay? Two other witnesses come and say, that's not true. Levi killed Shimon. In other words, two people are testifying, Reuven killed Shimon. Shimon's dead, that we see. Okay? That you don't need witnesses for. Shimon's dead. The only question is, who killed him? Two witnesses say, Reuven killed him, therefore Reuven got to get capital punishment. And two witnesses say, no, Levi killed him. Huh? So what happens? Halachically, they cancel each other out. As if there's no witnesses for anything. So all we know is Shimon's dead. But who killed him? We don't know. These two are big people, these two are not such great people. It doesn't matter. Two and two. Or like we said, 100 say Reuven killed Shimon. Two say no, Levi killed Shimon. They cancel each other out. There's no witnesses. That's logical. Okay? Two against two. No, what's illogical is two against 100. The 100 witnesses say Reuven killed Shimon, and two witnesses say no, Levi killed Shimon. That doesn't make sense. But that's halach, okay? Now, there's another scenario. Shimon's dead. Okay? That we know. Two witnesses come and say like this. We saw Reuven kill Shimon Sunday morning, 10 o'clock in L.A. Because Bezin asks, when did it happen? How did it happen? Okay? So they testify, two witnesses, that we testify that we saw Reuven kill Shimon 10 o'clock in the morning in L.A. Okay? Another two witnesses come and say, we don't know who killed Shimon. But what we know is, how could you testify that you two, that you saw Reuven kill Shimon Sunday morning in L.A., Sunday morning you were with us in Hawaii? You do two witnesses, you were with us in Hawaii. How can you testify that Reuven, we don't know who killed him. Okay, they're not testifying that. Two witnesses say, Reuven killed Shimon Sunday morning, 10 o'clock in L.A. Another two witnesses come and say, 1 minute. How could you two testify that you saw Reuven kill Shimon 10 o'clock in L.A.? You were with us in Hawaii. You weren't even in L.A. How can you testify? What's the halacha?
Cancel each other out?
Nope. And this is a doozer. You always believe the second group of witnesses or the last group of witnesses. And therefore you do to them what they wanted to do to the guy they testified against. That means these two witnesses that came and testified, we saw Reuven kill Shimon 10 a.m. in L.A., they wanted Reuven to get killed. You believe the witnesses that they were in Hawaii. You believe them. And therefore these two witnesses get killed. 1 second. If Reuven wasn't killed yet. Now, by the way, what happens if two other witnesses come? A third pair. And says to the second pair, how could you two testify? You saw them in Hawaii 11 at 10 a.m. You're with us in China. You believe the third. You always believe the last group.
And you give so the testimony of the first group stands.
Huh?
The testimony of the first group stands.
Yeah, but then you do to the second group what they wanted to do to the first group. Because the second group now wanted to get the first group of witnesses killed. Right? By saying that they were not that, okay. So this is the halacha was called Edim Zemimim. There's in halacha what's called hakhosha. Hakhosha is denial. That means this group says Reuven killed Shimon. The other group says Levi killed Shimon. They're contradicting the testimony, not the people. They're contradicting the testimony. So then the din is they cancel each other out. There's no testimony. Hazama is when you testify against the persona of the witnesses. That you guys are liars. How can you testify you saw him in L.A. kill Reuven, kill Shimon? You were with us in Hawaii. Then the Torah says it's not a kosher. Because it's not two against two. Because they're not saying that Reuven didn't kill Shimon. Maybe he did. They don't know. They weren't there. Or they're saying you guys can't testify that you saw him kill him in L.A. because you were with us in Hawaii. And the Torah says you always believe the last set of witnesses. Completely exerts a kosher. And the Torah is going to say, Kasher zamam lasis lochiv, you do to them what they wanted to do. But now Halacha says like this. What happens if the two witnesses came, testified Reuven killed Shimon in L.A., okay, and Beis Din killed Reuven for it. Beis Din accepted the witnesses, and they killed Reuven. After they killed Reuven, then the witnesses came and said, you guys were with us in Hawaii. You don't do anything to them. If they didn't kill him yet, they only wanted to kill him, then you kill them. But if Reuven actually got killed, you don't do anything to the witnesses. Because the Torah says, Kasher Zomam, what they wanted to do, Volo Kasher Osa, the Torah doesn't say you do to them what they did. From there we learn, if the guy did it already, if the Beis Din killed the guy, you can't kill him. So seemingly, it's exerts a cause, it's illogical. But there is a logic behind it. Is there a Ramban, Rabbeinu Bechaya? It's brought down in many places. It's a very beautiful explanation. It says like this, why do you talk, if the guy got killed, then you don't kill the witnesses. If they only wanted to kill him, then you kill him. It doesn't make sense. It should be the other way around. Like this, the guy didn't die yet, they wanted to kill him. Though I want to kill a lot of people. I'm not going to get killed because I wanted to kill people. So it says like this. It's late, but in a nutshell, if Beis Din killed somebody, God would never allow a proper Beis Din to kill an innocent person. God just wouldn't let it happen. The fact that God allowed and made Beis Din kill that guy, it seems that God was supposed to die for whatever reason. For another crime he did, whatever. Okay? So therefore the Torah says like this. If Reuven already got killed for the murder, then you don't do anything to the witnesses. Because obviously Reuven was supposed to die. They didn't kill an innocent guy. Okay? Maybe it was a different crime, maybe he killed somebody else, whatever. But if they didn't kill him, and they wanted to kill an innocent person, then they deserve to die. If the guy was killed, obviously he's not innocent because God would never allow Beis Din to kill an innocent person. It's not going to happen. But if they only wanted to kill an innocent person, God says, you want to kill an innocent person, you too are going to die. And that's the logic. We're not done. I mean, okay, but I mentioned,